Intellectually Petty Radio, and today we have the extreme honor and privilege of speaking with the legend himself, Mr. Bill Duke. How are you doing, King?
Pleasure to be here, my brother. I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for accepting our request. I don't know if you want to call it a request. Anyway, how's your family, man? How's life?
And these circumstances, thank God, we're good. It's day by day, as you know. But everybody's hunkering down and storing up, you know, and just making sure that we're as safe as possible. Not going out a lot, you know, but just watching how things are going.
Unfortunately, I'm a nurse. Well, I won't say unfortunately, but so it hasn't really stopped me from going to work. So it's been pretty interesting, to say the least.
What are you seeing out there these days?
I will say that it has made work more of a family atmosphere than it ever has been. And when you have a scare at work, when you have, like, I work in a nursing home, and when there's a possibility of someone with COVID, you can tell that it tenses up everything. People get a lot more scared. It's been tough, man. And then you have a lot of facilities where once it hits a nursing home, it hits it pretty bad.
Wow.
And to see those nursing homes to navigate that and lose staff member after staff member, it's humbling, to say the least.
Wow. Well, God bless you and those frontliners, man, because we need you so bad, and the courage that you have to go to work every day in spite of what you've said is amazing. So God bless you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, man. God bless you, bro. Like, I don't know if you realize how much appreciation our community has for you, bro. Like, I just put up the flyer that you were coming on, and people I've never talked to, friends I've probably had for years on Facebook, never heard one word from, coming out the woodworks and saying thank you just for having you on the show.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And hold on, let me just get my co-host on the line right quick. But I was watching an interview of yours. A young lady did an interview. I can't remember her name, but I believe it was on Netflix. And she was talking about a teacher of yours that had a journal. You had a journal back in the day.
Yes.
And this teacher somehow, she took that journal from you and ended up submitting some of your poetry. And it changed your view of white people at the time. Is that correct?
Well, I was, I come up during segregation, mm-hmm. Very, painful times for black people in this country in a lot of ways, and saw a lot of things occur. And Miss Walker, who was my English teacher, I have something called dyslexia, so I wasn't a great communicator, so I used to write things in my journal, my feelings and poems, etc. But I was a misbehavior, and I wrote, when she's teaching, I'm writing my journal, and she's saying, pay attention to the class. And I ignored her because, I was saying I was a racist, but I didn't like white people, and because I was concerned all white people were racist. At the end of the first half of the year, I was writing my journal, and I was going to leave class. She says, Duke, stay here. And so So I stayed, and she took my journal from me. And she said, I told you to stop writing. I'm taking a journal. Mm-hmm. I hated her. I mean, I came back to class, so I had to pass English, but I just hated her. And the last class of that year, I'm leaving. She says, come back here. I said, what do you want? She said, come back here. She went to her desk, and she pulled out the journal that she'd taken from me. Mm-hmm. And she gave me the National Poetry Contest book. She had submitted a couple of my poems and I'd won something. So it was challenging, because first she didn't have to do it. And she did it because she believed in me. So it was a great moment in my life.
I've had a similar moment with Teresa mm-hmm. Carroll. Shout out to you. She was an English teacher in high school. Teachers don't know, man. Sometimes they can change the whole trajectory of a kid's life.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Shout out to all the teachers out there that's listening.
Always. So
you've been in the business, what, 40, 50 years?
A long time.
What stands out? Do you enjoy directing or acting more?
I enjoy them both. But directing, you have a greater say in things. You have the ability to shape the message mm-hmm. of the movie. And kind of have more freedom to do certain things. You know, as an actor, mm-hmm. the script is already written and you collaborate with the writer and the director, but directing is a whole different deal. So I love directing too.
Is there anything that you've directed that you wish you hadn't?
Not really. I've been very fortunate. There's been some things I've acted in the early part of my career because I needed money.
I can understand that.
But I hope that I hope that it's erased forever. But, you know, it's like directing-wise, I was able to choose what I wanted to choose. And so it's been very, very fortunate, and I feel blessed for that.
That's dope. Because I'm not going to lie, man. I've kind of been scared of you, man, since Minister Society.
Hey man, they paid me, man. They paid me. Come on, they paid me. What can I tell you? They paid me.
I didn't think you laughed, man, until I was trying to do my research for the interview until I saw you in the interviews, and I'm like, wow, he's got a sense of humor. That's the impression. I mean, such a small line. Like, is your career defined by that one line to most of us?
I'll tell you, man. Can you see me?
Huh?
You can still see me?
Yes, sir.
Somehow I can't see you. Something happened. Wait a minute. Oh man.
We can definitely see you.
I don't know what happened.
Odds are you just turned off the video. I do that occasionally myself. I know for me at the bottom of the screen, the bottom left, it's a stop video thing.
Wow. Okay, I'm trying to find out how I get back to you. I'm going to try to click this thing and see if it works. But there you are. Oh. Yeah, I can see you now.
Okay.
So what was your question again?
Do you feel like your career has been defined to most of us by that one line?
My friend, of all the movies I've made and directed and been in and acted, no matter where I go, this has been for since I've made them, that this is society, in this country or outside of this country, particularly young people come up to me and say that line. It's amazing. I say, I mean, I guess that defines me as an actor, but it's wow. But it's like they like the movie, mm-hmm. but they love that scene too. So I was very fortunate.
And it sounds like, I don't know, kind of like water flowing or something slightly over there.
Over here?
Yes, sir. I'm not sure what that is. It's probably, you probably got the air conditioner on or something like that.
I can turn it off if you want to.
I don't want you to burn up, bro.
No, I'll be right back.
Okay. That's pretty dope, man. Bill Duke going to turn off the air conditioner for us, man. That's fucking dope, bro. We have Bill Duke in the building. Like, I haven't even changed the name on YouTube or anything. I haven't changed the name on Facebook. We got Bill Duke in the building, man. Like, how many shows you know got Bill Duke in the building? That sounds a lot better.
Is that better?
That is a lot better. And I'm sorry, King, but I just want to make sure that people can hear you clearly.
No problem, no problem.
So what was your first acting job?
Oh. First, I can't remember the name of the film, but it was for PBS, like some small little movie I did. And my first major acting job was Car Wash. The great Michael Schultz and Richard Pryor and the Pointer Sisters. That was my major breakthrough job.
That was a funny ass movie too.
Thank you.
Oh my God, man.
Ivan Dixon.
Some great people. After you get your first check, your first real check, what do?
Spend it.
Just all random stuff. You go buy a car, you go buy a house, you hit the club.
Nobody ever taught. So we're taught how to spend money, but not to use it, Mm-hmm. And so all the things I never had, I got.
Okay.
You know, and it was a good time, but, you know, I learned from that, you know, that you have to be more judicious in terms of how you know, money that's in this business, you don't work every day, every year, every month. Mm-hmm. You got to save for those times where you're not working too. And so I learned from that.
So when those young actors that come audition for you and you look at a guy and you realize, hey, he's got a lot of talent. Is that one of the pieces of advice that you give them?
Well, you try, you know, to let young people know, you know, it's called show business. Mm-hmm. And that it's a business, totally unpredictable. And then it's also a business of rejection. And you go for something, three roles a week, and everybody says, no, no, no. You do that for a few years, you know, they say don't take it personally, but it hurts.
Yeah.
And so you have to be ready for that and understand that that's the industry that we're in. And even if you have successes, it doesn't mean you're not going to be rejected. Hmm. And so it's a roller coaster.
Is it worth the ride?
I'm doing what I want to do in my life. I'm still doing it.
Okay.
And I admire friends of mine who they worked 35 years or more in businesses they hated, but they took care of their children. They mm-hmm. paid the mortgage, they paid the car note, they sent their kids to school. I chose a different path because I wanted to live my life in a way that I wanted to do what I wanted to do.
Any regrets?
I have some, but not a lot. Mm-hmm. I feel, how can I say, fulfilled on a lot of levels. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, you know, after a certain age, you know everything and you're wise. And what wisdom really is to me is understanding that you're always learning. Mm. And I'm learning to this day, still learning.
Mm. There's a lot of shit in my life I think I would go back and change if I could.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You never had kids, did you?
I have a goddaughter, but in this industry, it's not easy to have children. You know, relationships are, how can I say? I'm not blaming everything on it, but mm-hmm. if you're successful in this business, I'll give you an example. I broke up with a young lady one time, and it was a painful breakup, and I didn't see anybody really for months and months. Mm-hmm. I went to this party, and I met this young lady. We stood up, sitting down, started talking, and because I'd been through what I'd been through, I said to her, excuse me, you know, I've got you some questions. She said, okay. I said, are you an actor? She said, no. I said, do you want to be an actor? She said, no. I said, are you a producer? She said, no. I said, want to be a producer? She said, no. I said, you're a director? She said, no. I said, you want to be a director? She said, no. I said, oh, okay. Okay. So we saw each other, you know, we got together and started seeing each other and being together for like 3 or 4 months. And one morning, because she worked, she had a job, and she got up early and she kissed me on the cheek. She said, I love you. And there's something under my pillow, and I'm not going to tell you what it is. It's a gift for you. And I said, okay. So I woke up looking for this gift and looking under the pillow. It was a script. She was a writer. It was my fault. I forgot to ask her that question.
That's her fault, though, man. She knew what you were going for, and she could have been honest at that point.
But I'm just telling you, trust, you know, trust. Mm-hmm. And I'm with somebody now that, you know, I trust, care for, and love. And mm-hmm. it's not always easy to find, particularly in Hollywood, you know. Mm-hmm. Because this is a place of surfaces.
Because when, and it, maybe it's just me, but I just kind of got the feeling that to a certain extent, you've punished yourself a little bit by not allowing yourself certain things in your life. Is that a fair statement?
You say certain things, what do you mean?
Like children, for one. Outside of the relationship you're in now, like significant relationships. Have you been married?
No, not married, but significant relationships, yes.
Okay.
I've been with women for like 5, 6, 7 years, 8 years. Some of them wanted children, some of them didn't. Some mm-hmm. of them wanted family, some of them didn't. But it's, you know, it depends on who you're with and what they want and what you want.
Okay.
And I've been with a lot of people that are in the industry. And a lot of people, women, some women in the industry, they weigh their, how can I say, the relationship against their career.
Okay.
And so if you want, you know, if you have children, 2 and 3 children, and you really want to act or sing or whatever it is, you got to weigh
yeah.
the balance.
Yeah.
It's not always easy. It's not a snap decision you can make. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Does it make any sense?
Yeah, it does. It's unfair that we put that burden on women too, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, we put a lot of burdens on women that we shouldn't, because we all go through difficult times, but women have it a lot more harder in this industry than we do.
Yeah.
I had a friend once who was an executive over at a studio, and a friend of mine was you know, she was on Broadway in a show, and she wanted to come to Hollywood, and I introduced, and she was like, you know, 35 years old. And I introduced her to my buddy, and he saw her, and I didn't hear from him for a week. So I called him. I said, what's going on? He said, come on, let's talk, man. So I go in, I sit down in his office. I said, well, what happened? You didn't get back to me. He said, well, look, man, she's sound like a great actress, great people, but let me be honest with you, man. He said, with women in this industry, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33. And he had this can of soda in his hand. And he threw it in the garbage. He said, I don't feel this way. So with the industry, they're disposable. Mm-hmm. He said, there are young girls, thousands of them come into this town every day. Every day. And he pointed something out to me. I never thought about it. He said, you know, Harrison Ford could be in a movie and he could be in his 70s and have a love interest in her 30s. He said, name one woman, except for Meryl Streep possibly, in this industry who could be in her 70s and have a love relationship with a man in his 30s. Mm. Does that tell you something?
That does. Although I think what's it, Diane Keaton. I saw a movie with her and Jack Nicholson, and she was dating a young doctor. That would be the only one. That would be the only other one I can think of.
I'm saying that's two. Keep counting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got. And that's horrible.
Well, it's real. And you know, it's, but women overall, you know, I admire women because, you know, I was having this is years ago, a fight with this woman I was seeing, and she said how she told what women go through, and I was thinking, well, men go through things too, you know, blah 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 blah. She said, but you don't understand. I said, you don't understand. She said, okay, do me a favor. She said, I want you to go to online and look at the natural childbirth site, and let's talk after you watch it. And so I went on this site, and I watched two births. I called her back and said, where do you want to go to dinner? Name me one man that you know that could go. Name me one man that could go through that. Name somebody.
Nine months,
right? Then it comes out through your, you know what I'm saying?
No. Yeah.
Do you want that?
I saw my middle daughter born, and I, what I tell people is the most beautiful, ugly experience. And when I talk to young cats now, I tell them top down only. Don't look from the bottom up.
That's
you
right.
Don't want to see that work, I'm telling you.
it's a whole other reality.
Who's your favorite
actor? Actor-wise?
Who's your favorite actor? Hmm? Actor and actress.
Actress is Meryl Streep, one of the greatest of all times. Cicely Tyson, Sidney Poitier. I think Denzel's a great actor. Jeffrey Wright's a great actor. Sam Jackson.
I'm trying to think who Jeffrey Wright is.
Oh man, Jeffrey Wright is a bad boy. He's
is that the light skinned brother?
Yeah.
I think I'm looking up on now.
Okay. They're in a lot of great things, yeah. Jeff, you're right.
Sam Jackson is, oh my God, Samuel Jackson is classic movie after classic movie.
Yeah.
Is there a story out there that you would love to direct? And I have one for you too after this question.
There are several, but I would love to direct the Paul Robeson story.
Okay, that would be a good one.
I mean, he was a, when I say genius, I'm not exaggerating. This, I mean, an academic scholar, an athlete, a singer, an actor, a writer, the list goes on and on and on.
And phenomenal in each one.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And punished because he spoke his mind.
Yeah. Reminds me of the story you were telling, and before I even get into that, there's a brother named Abraham Bolden. He's the first guy over 5 years ago that we had on the show. And he was the first black man to personally guard the president in the Secret Service.
Wow.
And he guarded Kennedy. And this guy's story, like, he was the first detective at Pinkerton Agency that was black. they tried to kill this. I mean, the story was just, I think we said maybe 10 words the whole show, and he just told his life story in such a way that had us all like in tears at times. I mean, it was just probably the greatest story anyone has ever verbally told me.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of it. I've got his book too. Damn, I cannot remember the name of the book, but I will, I'll email your assistant his name.
Okay.
Because this guy, I'm just and I'm sorry, I'm not a writer or anything. I'm not trying to sell anything. He just had a hell of a story.
Great. Let me know.
Absolutely. Jason, I had another question that kind of ruined my train of thought right there. But shout out to Abraham Bolden, and thank you, sir, for being on the show. You're a writer, producer, actor, director. Is there something that you still want to do that you haven't done?
I want to own my own content. I'm very appreciative to be working.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to really be able to leave a legacy that your company actually owns content that is here far after you're gone, you know, and that's one thing, you know. But my foundation is very important to me also, the Duke Media Foundation. You can go online and look under the DukeMediaFoundation.org.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach young high school students two things. Media literacy, if you want to be in this business, where's the business going? It's not just television and film anymore, but it's media.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you really understand how to utilize that and leverage it to your benefit? And then we teach them financial literacy. Because no one teaches us as a culture, what is Wall Street? What is debt? What is credit? What is the FDIC? You know, what is banking? What is a stock? What is a bond? We have people in our culture, and you know this to be true,
that
make $200 or $300 million and go broke.
Yeah.
How do you make $300 million?
And go broke.
And go broke.
Trying to save your neighborhood.
Well, if we take just 5% of that and put it in the bank someplace or in an account.
Yeah. Yeah.
5%.
Yeah.
What is that, 10 million?
That sounds about right. That, you know, my math is not that great, but that's, yeah. You know, you need to have that rainy day fund. If you got $300 million, it's no way in hell you or your kids or your grandkids should ever go broke.
Never.
Yeah.
So we teach financial literacy and media literacy. And if you're any of your fans want to donate, please don't be bad. Go to DukeMediaFoundation.org.
Okay.
Because we are, you know, I think our generation has responsibilities beyond our own gratifications.
Mm-hmm.
You have to leave something. Give something back.
Now, I would say your generation is probably the greatest generation of Black folks in this country, this country's history.
Thank you.
I think that, and I tell people all the time, my generation dropped the ball.
Why is that?
Crack. We allowed, I mean, they put it in our neighborhoods, don't get me wrong, and it was a concerted effort, but we allowed it. And I remember the summer that crack really hit Detroit. That's where I grew up at. And man, it was a party. We all thought, you know, that my friends weren't using crack, they were selling crack. But the violence hadn't kicked in, and it didn't seem as, you know, it seemed like a better weed. A more profitable weed. And we did not anticipate or think or even consider the damage that we were doing to generations to follow us.
I hear you.
So, yeah, like my mother, rest in peace. She and her generation, great jobs, great careers, left homes, left cars, left money in the bank, had life insurance, and we squandered it.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, as a collective, you know, you guys did a hell of a job, man. You really did.
Thank you. Well, we were brought up by people who, my mother and father, for example, did not have high school educations. I think they barely got out of grade school. Mm-hmm. Some of the most brilliant people I've ever known, survivors. And they taught my sister and I something that I always talk about and say. They taught us, they said, you're no better than anybody else, but nobody's better than you. Mm. And coming up during segregation and coming up during the painful times that we faced, they were our anchors. And you had no option but to get an education. You didn't have an option not to go to school, because they didn't go to school and they knew what that cost them. So we were going to go to school, and they made us go to school and college and everything. Mm-hmm. But their generation, that generation, I mean, they saw things that I can't even, they saw the lynchings and what they call the nigger barbecues, where they used to put us on spits and turn us while we were alive and roast us to death. When they went to church on Sunday morning and say it was raining, because they had wooden sidewalks and dirt streets at that time, and they were going in that direction, they were dressed for church, and a white family came in the opposite direction, they had to step down into the mud and bow their heads down and let the white family go by. They got like 100 yards, and they, every time a white family passed, they had to step into the mud. Wow. I'm just saying that I wish young people understood better the history of our culture, because mm-hmm. they're here because there are a lot of sacrifices that were made that they don't even understand. And other cultures teach that.
Yeah.
But they're taking that out of schools, Black history, music, a lot of things are taken out of school these days. And I think it's shameful, because I wish there was more understanding of what we've been through. We're an incredible culture. I mean, one of the most, I call us alchemists, you know? Jesus was the first alchemist. He turned water into wine. But you give us guts, we turn them into chitlins.
Yep.
And we still do that today. And so I just wish there was a greater appreciation for our history. Because we are great people. We are a great people. So I'm fortunate that I know this is a controversial topic, but I give no excuse to the police that are killing us.
None.
But we're killing as many or more of each other every day.
Yeah.
And we make excuses. Well, you know, it's the system. And it's true, the system is there, but. And it programs us to die and kill each other, but our cooperation is what is very concerning, you know?
Yeah.
It was a joke. It was supposed to be funny. It was on online. And it was the head of the KKK, the Grand Wizard, he was on a stage. And on the ground there were 100 or more Klan members, mm-hmm. and they were taking off their hoods and robes, and they were sobbing until the tears came up above their knees. And the Grand Wizard gets on the microphone and he says, "Boys, I guess we ain't needed no more, because they're doing it to themselves."
Wow. Mm. Yeah, I get you. Yeah. And I feel complicit, and I tell people all the time, you know, like I'm part of the reason some of these young cats are like that. And that's why I started the show, is to try to make amends for some of the fuck ups I've done in my life. Excuse my language.
We've all done.
Yeah. You know, so this was my way of saying, hey, I want to give us a platform. And our motto is from goons to gods. We welcome everyone. But we have one rule, and that's be respectful. And we have allowed, if you black, you can come on the show. we've had two white people on the show, interesting conversations, and they've been great white folks, great representatives of what a human being should be. Mm-hmm. Other than that, this is our way of saying, hey, we did a lot wrong, but let's try to do something right. I heard the story about your father punching two police officers and taking their guns to the police station.
Yeah.
That's some powerful shit to see.
Especially.
That's got to stick with you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, especially during that time of segregation, you know, my father, you know, he was a very humble man. He was a survivor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there's one thing you didn't do. You didn't mess with his family. And when he made a U-turn and the cops stopped him and he rolled the window down, my father said, I was wrong. I should have made that U-turn. And the cops said, nigga, get out the car. And the father, what'd you say? He said, nigga, get out the car. In front of his family, the cops said that.
Mm-hmm.
He got the car and punched the two cops, took their guns, went down to the police station, and told the chief of police what had happened. And the head of the police said, thank you for the guns, Mr. Duke, but if they had done that to me, I'd done the same thing. And me and my sister observed that. We observed it. And to have that man in my life was my foundation. Still is. That mother and that father shaped who I am as a human being. And I always try not to disappoint them, you know, because I know they're watching and, you know, they're there.
I think they, I'm absolutely certain they are proud.
Thank you.
I am. Not that it means anything, but
it means
I'm
a lot.
Absolutely proud of you, you know.
Thank you.
And we try to make sure. Well, you deserve it, shit, bro. Like, you didn't just have a career in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You had a career in black folks' lives. And it just wasn't, okay, I'm going to punch the clock and go home. You went home and it did more.
Thank you.
So, yeah, no, thank you. And I know you don't have much time. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I wanted to make sure that we did say thank you and give you your roses while we could. And thank you for the opportunity. Let people know again if they want to donate to your foundation where they can do that.
Duke Media Foundation, DukeMediaFoundation.org, DukeMediaFoundation.org. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're trying to help as many kids as we can in our community. So anything that you, I don't take any fee or anything. My staff does, but the money goes toward the children. And we're graduating, unfortunately, in some of the public school systems in Los Angeles County. Young people from high school with second grade reading skills. How do you survive in a global economy with a second grade reading skill? And these kids are some of them are brilliant. We have to do what we can to help save them because it's an urgent situation. What I'll leave you with is, you like quotes?
Absolutely.
Give my three favorite quotes.
Okay.
Aspire to inspire before you expire. The second one is, if a man does not seek humility, humility will seek the man. And last but not least, in your lifetime, you will never see a smaller package than a person wrapped up in themselves.
That's deep right there. Yeah, I'm going to have to use that. That last one, I've never heard that one before. That man, I'm gonna have to use that on folks I know.
I understand.
And once again, man, thank you so much. If somehow in some alternate universe there's something we could actually do for you, don't hesitate, man, to let us know, and we will be more than honored to complete that task for you.
Well, God bless you both. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your great questions and great show. So thanks a lot. Okay.
Thank you. That means a lot. You have a good one, man. Peace.
Take care. Peace to you. Bye.
All right. That's fucking dope. That's fucking dope, bro. I guess that's just one I'm never going to forget right there. But don't forget to check out the websites, liberationmindedmedia.com, mrochelle.com. Don't forget to check out the IG, My Skin Is My Sin, the number one, Intellectually Petty Radio, and Liberation Minded Media. Oh, and Striving for Perfection. I know there's an underscore in there somewhere. Look it up. You'll see it. Shout out to 300 Gangsters. Shout out to Keys Development. I think I got your shout outs there wrong. And other than that, man, we out, man. And once again, man, thank you again for Mr. Bill Duke. It was an honor and a privilege to have that king on. And we'll upload this as soon as we can get it cleaned up a little bit. All right, man. Y'all have a good one. And we out. Peace, fam.